Nick. Got my brother, my former teammate, Nick Cannamelli, joining Go Terps with Travis Garrison on the Field of 6-8 Networks. What's going on, bro, man? How's everything?
Everything's great, man. It's good to see you. I've been looking forward to it.
Absolutely. I know I appreciate you taking time out your schedule. I know you over in Spain, right?
France.
Yeah, living life,
Bouncing around.
Yeah, you're over in France right now, man. I see the lovely family, man. How's everybody doing? How's the family?
Everybody's great. We are in the south of France, in Marseille. And I'm here with my wife and my daughter. She's 15 months, Jade. And we've been, it's basically kind of lockdown, semi-lockdown. You can go outside, but the only thing open is like grocery stores. So we've just been laying low, man. Just, you know, gym home type of routine and spending time with Jade and wifey. So it's been cool, man. It's been a good year.
Man, that's what's up, man. You said the south of France, man. I was like, so you said the south of France, bro. I already know. I already can imagine how that is, man, and how beautiful it is, man. Then, like, you've been over there with your family. I'm like, you know, I mean, there it is right there. You got everything right there, man. The wifey, the little one.
Exactly. It's been cool, man. I mean, obviously, hopefully, before I get out of here, things open up a little bit. But like you just laid out, man, there's nothing to complain about. Everybody's healthy, so. Season's going good. My body feels pretty good. So it's all good, man.
Hey, you keeping it going for us, man. You know, the fearsome foursome, bro. You keeping it going for us, bro.
Yeah, man. I'll be 38 in October. This is year number 15. So, you know, I'm still enjoying it. And obviously the biggest factor is health. You know, that's something I control. I try to control what I can control, which is, you know, just taking care of my body and diet stuff that is really necessary at this stage. But other than that, it's just the basketball gods keeping me healthy. And as long as I can play, I'm going to play, man. I'm definitely going to keep on going. I still love it. And, you know, I understand that I have the rest of my life to do anything else. So I'm going to do this as long as I can.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I definitely, like I said, man, I keep up with all you guys, man. And just see you out of our group, man, still playing, bro. You know, sometimes I miss it. I miss the whole plan part, but then my body reminds me like, man, not really. Yeah. Right. No, but mostly the traveling part, man, seeing other countries and the culture, man. Now you get to have your family with you to take with you over there, man. So it's definitely a beautiful thing, bro.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Hey, have you been keeping up with the Terps this year, this past season?
I have as much as possible. The time difference makes it tough to watch the games. Mm-hmm. You know, even in the tournament, I wasn't able to watch the game. It's 6 hours later here. But I followed, you know, and was rooting for them and had them in my bracket for sure. You know, I always do a tourney bracket, which my bracket was a disaster, but I always ride with the Terps, man. And it looks like they had a really good year. And I just can't imagine being a college athlete during all this stuff going on with COVID. So, you know, hats off to them for having a successful season under the circumstances. And, you know, it looks like they got a good program and good staff over there. I haven't really got a chance to talk to Coach Turgeon much, but I've heard great things about him. So, you know, I've been following from afar for sure.
Yeah, definitely, man. And, you know, the people that the individuals that I did talk to about, you know, playing in the COVID situation, man, you know, last year they had a chance to go far, and then COVID happened and shut down the season. So you can just only imagine, bro, we get on our run and then they shut the whole season down. And now we can't even get in the tournament. And then the following season, you don't even know if you're going to have a season, then playing with no fans. And you know how we was playing, you know, how our fans helped us out a lot when we were playing, especially those big games. Man.
That's one of the best parts of the experience, you know, the fans and the environment, and to not have that I can't imagine, man. It's tough. This whole COVID experience has hit everything, you know, and for athletes, you know, I'm sympathetic towards that part. And then the lifestyle too of being a college student and that whole experience, which was a great part of it as well. You know, I'm sure on campus things are looking a lot different,
right?
You know, Which probably has its pros and cons too. You know what I mean? Those guys don't have much distractions, but you know, I would definitely, you know, not want to be in that situation as a college student athlete. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I'm pretty sure it's kind of not similar, but a little similar over there with you all, man. Do you all have fans at the games?
No, in France, it's been a mess. Like when I first got here in the middle of August, things were open. They were carrying it like COVID's all good. You know, we got past. And at that point, the narrative was United States dropped the ball. Europe did it the right way because they locked down, like really strict lockdown.
Right.
But then as things have come full circle, now Europe is, because they opened back up and because they were living life relatively normal, in September, October, they just had a spike and then locked things down. So I've been on lockdown since like October for 6 months now. And like I'd mentioned, no fans, but nothing open with the exception of grocery stores and essential, nothing open. You know what I mean? No restaurants, just takeout, which we experienced in the States, you know, but I experienced it in the States. And then as soon as I got over here, so I've basically been on lockdown for a year. When I got back from Japan, it was Japan that started in January. It started earlier. So I left Japan because of COVID, thinking I'm getting away from it.
Right.
As soon as I get back to the States in late February, it hits the States, locked down for majority of the summer, and then get over it. Things just had started to kind of open up a little bit when I left in early August, but then get over here and I'm thinking, oh, this is nice. Things are open, and then boom, everything's shut down. So yeah, it's similar with the no fans, and it's a different vibe without fans for sure.
Yeah, man. Like I said, good thing you got your family over there, man. You're not going crazy, you know, because you're by yourself. So I know that, like I said, that,
man. Yeah, I'm not going crazy. Wifey, it's not easy when you don't have family to help. I mean, you're a dad,
right?
You know, and you know, she's here with a 1 year, and I'm obviously traveling and, you know, sometimes 2 days. And she's here with a 1 year old,
right,
with no outlets. Nowhere right. to take her,
right.
Nobody to come over and help for a date night. No, you know what I mean? So it's been that process of that part of it has been tough, you know, for her. And then obviously for me seeing her, cause she's somebody who has sacrificed a lot from her career to be over here at, you know, she's somebody who likes to be active and likes right. to be doing things and following her passions. So that alone is tough, but then to be over here on lockdown without, you know, with a 1 year old. So that takes away a lot of your identity for a certain, to a certain extent with how much time you have to dedicate to the kid. So that part has been challenging for sure. You know, but we're taking it a day at a time and we're figuring out and it's been cool, man. As you know, being a dad is the best thing in the world,
yeah.
You know, and now I got her, you know, I think she's going to love basketball. Of course, you know, as a basketball player, I would say that. And I don't think I'm being biased. Like she's just, I took her to the gym today and she's chasing the ball, saying ball,
yeah,
all this stuff. So I just can't wait, man. I just look forward to every single part of it. And, you know, as every dad tells me and mom tells me, it goes by so quick. So yeah. That's been one of the silver linings about everything being slowed down right now with COVID, because I've been so present and I've been, you know, with her more than I ever would be with just being at home and not being all over the place. You know, so that part of it has been cool for sure.
Yeah, definitely, man. It definitely goes by super fast. Every time I see my daughter, man, it just seems like she's getting taller. All my kids just seem to be getting taller, more mature. It goes super fast. I had my, I went to a basketball practice yesterday and I took her, she wanted to go with me. And I slowly been kind of seeing if she liked the game of basketball and things like that. And she's starting to really get into it. Like, she's super competitive anyway, you know. But yesterday we was at the court. She was like itching to get out there. I went to basketball, I want to dribble. Like, she just – so I'm like, all right. So now that I'm starting to see that, I kind of, you know, push her a little bit more, yeah. You know. And it's just, yeah, man. So, you know, none of my boys play basketball. So she's, like, the more athlete of the family. So I'm curious to see how she's going to respond to that, man. Yeah. But man, so let's talk a little bit about Maryland, man. So obviously coming out of high school, man, big deal, you know, main player of the year. Pretty sure you had a ton of offers. What made you choose the University of Maryland? And what other? And if you didn't go to Maryland, where would you have gone to?
Yeah, coming out of Maine, I don't know if I would have considered myself a big deal. I appreciate that. You know what I mean? I was, you know, coming from Maine, there wasn't a lot of guys who had played it at big schools. And I didn't really get recruited from Maine. My dad's from LA, so I played on an AU team in LA. And that's where I was first seen by Jimmy Patsos. And you know, my mom's a high school guidance counselor, so that was a big benefit for me, because what she does for a big part of her job is helping kids transition from high school to college and deciding where to go and why they want to go there. So one of the things my mom told me is, when you go on campus, you know, you'll have this feeling like, I feel like this is home. This you can't really quantify it, but you just have that feeling, you know. And I visited Missouri, North Carolina, UConn, and I then visited Maryland. And it was a combination of things. One, being on the East Coast and being in a big market, you know, I was excited about that. And then I'd actually committed before Maryland won the national championship. But they obviously had a great program at that point with the similar guys on that team. They'd been playing well. So they were, you know, a perennial top 10 at that point, top 15. So it's a big, big school. And I loved Jimmy and Coach Dickerson and Gary. Gary came up to Maine and I took him out for some lobster. You know, I just felt comfortable, you know what I mean? And went down for my visit and was with Steve Blake and Drew and those guys. And, you know, those guys made me feel really comfortable. And then it was an easy decision. You know, it was just like my mom had said, it was that gut feeling, like I felt like it was home. And it took me no time at all to make a decision once I went down there.
Yeah, man. Definitely. I think when I went on my visit, man, it was I was with Chris Wilcox. So it was pretty cool, man. So you choose Maryland, but if you didn't go to Maryland, what was your second choice?
It's interesting, because at that time, my second choice would have been Missouri, and it really wasn't in comparison to North Carolina, Virginia, you know, some of the other schools that I was looking at, Kansas, UConn. It wasn't obviously the biggest name, but I loved Quinn Snyder, and he was the sole reason why I was so interested in Missouri was him. You know, he was one of the first people that recruited me. And his personality and talk about feeling comfortable, you know, when I went to my visit there, like, he really made me feel appreciated. He really knew my game. It wasn't just like the pitch, you know, it was really personalized to me and my game. And I felt like, in comparison to some other places,
right,
I was going to be able to have an impact immediately as a freshman. I didn't know what it was going to look like at Maryland. I knew, you know, there'd be some opportunity to play at the three with Mouton leaving. But with Missouri, it was going to be like a real big role right away. So that would have been it. And, you know, I'm not surprised to see all the success that Quinn Snyder's had as a coach, man, because he was a special dude. And, you know, I've stayed in touch with him a little bit, and he's a great guy. And that would have been number two for me, for sure.
Okay. So now the transition from living in Maine, now you at Maryland, your first year, what was that transition like for you that summer? And then obviously that first year, you know, coming in obviously from high school and then going on to play at the college level especially after they won the national championship, what was that process like?
Yeah, man. I mean, the biggest adjustment for me was adjusting to the fact that understanding what our, I don't even know how to articulate it, like what we were on the campus, you know what I mean? And the fact that we had people watching everything we were doing, that and that part of it, like that kind of celebrity of it, was really new to me. Cause in Maine, if you play basketball, nobody cared. You know what I mean? It was like, all right, cool. You know what I mean? It wasn't a big deal. So I would be able to go to parties and be able to do, and I would just be one of the fellas. I would just be one of the other guys, you know? And as soon as I get to Maryland, I came in probably with that energy a little bit too much. Like, you know, I was just being myself, and which is fine, but you also have to learn at a young age, right at 18 years old, coming out of high school, that you need to carry yourself sort of as an adult to a certain extent. Like, you have to, you're representing a university, a program, there's a lot of history, and you can't just be one of the fellas. You can't just be one of the guys at the party. You know, you have a lot more to lose, and you have a lot more eyes on you. And so that was an adjustment for me. And it was an adjustment for me throughout all of college. You know, it's an adjustment. You're a young guy, and, you know, just finding, you know, your rhythm with how to carry yourself was something that was a process for me. And I do think part of it was because I was from a small town, but I think that part of it is just the reality of being young in that environment, you know, where all of a sudden you go from a small area to a place where, you know, you're walking around campus and everybody knows who you are, and you go to restaurants, you go to a bar, everybody knows who you are. And that whole thing was an adjustment for sure.
Yeah. Like I said, I can imagine, man, like you said, coming from Maine and then coming to the East Coast. I mean, then back then, man, DC, that area was live. And even on campus, man, yeah. It's crazy. Like I said, you just won a national championship and they still was riding high off that. So we kind of got that same energy, you know what I mean? As if we
won, for sure.
You know what I mean? So
walked right into that for sure. Right.
Man, we thought we wanted yeah. Chip. We just had a ring to show it. So all right, now, like I said, you come from Maine. Now, in regards to the basketball world, what was that transition like? You know, like you said, you know, playing, getting a lot of minutes in high school, but then you come to college, you don't really know how much time you're going to get or what the situation is because of the players that's coming back from the national championship team. So what was that adjustment like? And that whole process of adjusting to the time and then to the role that you had to play.
Yeah, in retrospect, a lot of it came down to the people in the organization, and my teammates made it a lot easier for me. You know, when I think back on it now, at that time, I was a little bit, even on the court, I was a little bit ignorant to how big it was of what it was we were doing. You know, I was kind of like blind to the fact that we were playing in front of millions of people, you know, like I was in the moment and it was basketball to me. So that part of it was, if I was to do it now, I think I'd probably have more nerves. It's crazy to say, like, even after playing as a pro, I'd probably have more nerves now than I did then. I look back, I was 18 and I remember playing in my first game and I was relatively comfortable. I wasn't super nervous, but a lot of it was because of the leaders on the team, like Steve Blake, Drew Nicholas. And a big one for me was Calvin McCall. So, like, talking about playing minutes. So I came in and he was a returning senior, and you know how it is when you come into a team, everybody know who's the point guard, who's the two. Steve Blake's the starting one. Nobody's questioning that. And if you did, you were catching a jab. Everybody's seen that on YouTube with JG. And then with Drew Nicholas, you had him at the two, but then it was like Calvin McCall at the three, who played football, and he was kind of the starter because he was a senior. And then, you know, the four and the five, relatively similar with Ryan Randall. You know, he was a guy who, you know, been on the national championship team. And so you knew he was going to play minutes. And Taj Holden, you know, so I think that throughout that process, Calvin made me feel really comfortable in that position because he didn't look at it like you're taking my minutes. He carried it like I'm going to be a mentor to you of what you need to do to be an impact player and to be able to play a role on this team. Like, he was unbelievable. I mean, that whole experience, I still carry some of the things that he did as a mentor and as a leader on with me throughout my whole career now, of how to be with younger guys and how important it is to make them feel comfortable. Because it's important to challenge young guys, but also making them feel comfortable is important too, I feel like. And Blake did a great job. And then you had guys like Dave and Jimmy and Matt, the assistants, who Gary was intimidating. Mm-hmm. There's no getting around it, because he demanded respect and he was an incredible, you know, national championship coach and played at Maryland and was a big time coach. So he was intimidating coming in as a freshman. I mean, to be fair, he was intimidating to me all the way until the day I left. Even now, like, I have so much respect for Coach Williams that I don't think intimidated is the right word, but it's, you have so much respect to it where it's almost intimidated, which I feel like is the max respect, right, you know? And so those guys did a really good job of translating, you know, some of Coach Williams' messages and helping, you know, behind the scenes with feeling comfortable on and off the court. So the transition for me, a big part of it was the leadership of some of those veteran guys, and then the coaching staff made it a lot easier. And then having young guys with me, like you and JG and Chris, and how we all went through that together, having the relationship, because we had such a close relationship from when we first came in.
Right.
And I think that part, when you had other guys that you could lean on and we're all going through the same thing, you know, I think that that was a big part of it as well, with being comfortable and, you know, getting to the point where we won an ACC championship as sophomores was part of, I think, you know, feeling comfortable right away, and then the relationship that we had.
Right, right. And you made a good point, man. Because I look back on it a lot myself, especially when I talk to the younger players or any other players in regards to, I mean, we 18 years old. You know what I mean? We coming in on campus. We don't know I know for myself, I didn't understand or comprehend the positions that we were in and what we were walking into. Like you said, we walking right on campus, like, it's just another day, you know, we're going to go up here and practice, we're going to hoop. Whereas, like you said, we don't understand that there's going to be millions of people watching, that the fan base is crazy, you know, that people demand more from us, or the expectations that they had. Like, I know for myself, man, I didn't understand it. None of that, like nothing, like nothing. You know what I mean? It was just, like I said, I was just going on campus and just, I was bad. Like you said, man, I was the same way, you know. I always looked at myself as just one of the guys. So
yeah,
I can go out, I can go have fun, I can go party, I can go bars, and nobody ain't gonna know why. Like, I'm hanging out with friends, and we just having a good time. Whereas that's not the case, you know. That's not the case. That, like you said, looking back on it now, we understand how big we were, but we understand at the time, which I know for me kind of put me in situations, you know what I mean? But
for sure,
like you said, we live and learn. We learn from that stuff, and now we use those things, like you said, to talk to the younger players, to talk to our teammates. Now we kind of, we had the mentors. You had Calvin. Calvin used to talk to me a lot too. You know, he used to say certain things. He was real cool with it. Put us to the side, or we walk into the room, or go to his room, and we had those conversations. You know, Ryan Randall, Taj, and Steve, all those guys, they did a great job in regards to bringing us in and kind of mentoring us in a sense, you know, kind of forcing us to get on their level. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
They demanded so much because they just won a national championship, and they fought. Yeah. They actually fought their way to that position, and they deserve the respect, like you said, and especially with Coach Williams, you know. So that's something that, like you said, looking back on it now, I didn't understand at the time, but I use it now to help other young players and other individuals and other players and other student athletes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What was the, so at Maryland, what was some of the, we're going to go through a couple of things, man, because I was there with you, bro. So what was some of your best moments on and off the court? Like, what was some of the things? I already kind of know which one you're going to say in regards to on the court, but like, what was some of your best moments? Like, man, this is one of my best moments. Like, I always talk about this.
I thought you were going to say, you already know what I was going to say, my best moments off the court. I thought that's what you were going to leave with. Nah, but on the court, I remember a few that pop out immediately for me. One, when we went down to Florida, you hit that big shot, and we beat Florida when they were number one in the nation. And that was, I remember that. Obviously, the ACC tourney run as sophomores, winning in Duke when we were juniors, when they were number one. I think to beat a number one team and then to do it on their court, those are, you know, it's I think it's all that much more sweet when you do it on their court. And then those are the ones that really stand out. You know, those are the ones that when I think back on you know, on the court, those were the biggest events for us. And then off the court, you know, off the court, what I remember now are the lessons that I learned, you know, some of the things that weren't necessarily positive experiences. So those are the ones that I think about the most. The funnest times I had were, you know, us living together, that process, you know, being able to have, we had a four of us staying in the same spot, me, you, John, and Chris. And I think we had, did Dre live with us, right? Andre Collins?
Andre Collins and Jamar Smith.
And Jamar Smith, yeah. And just that, you know what I mean? There's so many good times we had that I can't necessarily think of one. But it wasn't anything really going out. It was always the stuff that we were doing, you know, at the spot or the interactions we had, the stuff that we were doing when we were hanging out.
The freestyle.
Those were, yeah, man. You know what I mean? It was funny because there was a podcast with J.J. Redick and Dame Lillard was on it. And sure. And Dame had asked him, like, did you play when Nick Cannon Medley was at? And they've been talking a little bit about rap because Dame obviously is so talented. And Dame was like, oh, he's nice, man. He's nice. And J.J.'s like, he raps? And Dame was like, nah. And I was just about to reach out to those dudes and be like, hold up. But no, I mean, all that stuff, man, we did that was, you know, those experiences are what I remember the most, man. Those were the best experiences off the court. But there was ones to your point, and I've followed the stuff that you're doing off the court now and think first. That mantra in and of itself is such a great lesson for young people because you hear it. I heard it to a certain extent, but not simplified and so direct. From older guys when I was young. But that's really what it comes down to. You know, you think of some of the decisions that I made and we all made at that age. If we just taken a little bit more time to think about what we were doing and then the consequences and repercussions, you know, probably would have gone a long way. But, you know, those experiences prepared me to be a pro. Absolutely. And I would have rather had, thank God there wasn't social media like it is now when we were in college. Good Lord. You know, that would have had potential to be damaging moving forward. But joking aside, man, it was lessons that prepared me to be a pro, you know, and when I went overseas, you know, it prepared me for after having 4 years at school and being in that environment, you know, I already understood, you know, certain responsibilities that I didn't understand. And that's why I think that the college process for student athletes is so important. I mean, obviously there's the talent and you see a lot of guys going the G League and now some guys are going to Europe first as opposed to going to college. But I think that if I was an NBA team and an executive, I think that I would value guys that have had a couple of those learning curves. And I guess, and I'm sure the G League is going to do a great job of, but you can teach somebody something, but real life experience is different than hearing about it. Sitting in a lecture hall and having somebody tell you, hey man, you got to think about this and they're going to do that. But to actually be in the mix is a whole different set of experiences because a lot of times the ones that make you better and prepare you to really actually have that responsibility are the ones that you make mistakes, the setbacks, because you really feel it. You right. really understand. Wow, this sucks. I don't want to have to deal with this again. I mean, I got arrested in college. You know what I mean? That wasn't a secret. You know, then there's headlines of me saying wild stuff, you know, that I never really said, to be fair. But that's part of it, right? I mean, you're never going to get the fair shake of what did you really say when you were drunk in the middle of a party and, you know, in an altercation. Like, nobody cares what you really said. You shouldn't have been drunk at 20, you know. Well, drunk at 20 is, you know, whatever. It's part of learning, but you shouldn't have been in an altercation. It doesn't matter what you said. You know what I mean? So those experiences made me better and taught me what I needed to know to be a pro for sure.
And you made some great points, man. And I remember that Duke game too, bro. You was killing that game too, bro. You was killing.
I think
that
we all tend to remember some of the games you played good. I didn't mention any games that I played like shit.
Hey, bro, that game right there, that game was special, bro. That you was it was crazy. I remember that game. And obviously the ACC run. I mean, that's like one of the moments I always bring up 24/7 when it comes to our college experience. I think we could have, and like you saying, going back to the whole, the think first and you know, make a wiser choices. I mean, like you said, man, we coming in, we're young teens. We don't know nothing. We don't know nothing about nothing. We just want to have a good time. We kind of like the big deal on campus. We kind of, you know, everybody knows who we are. And we don't understand, like, if I think, I know for myself, speaking for myself, if I'd have had a mentality like a Steve Blake and a Drew and those guys in regards to the dedication to the game, I think we would have, I know for myself speaking, if I would have been more focused and, you know, dedicated myself more to the game than to these clubs and parties and stuff, man, I probably could have helped the team a lot more than I did. You know what I mean? So I always think back on those things, you know, like you said, we have the good moments, but the experiences, the things that we've been through, the troubles that we've been through, it always kind of like, it molded us a certain way, you know, kind of help us going on in life and, you know, learning the lessons. You know, if you don't go through anything, how can you really build and grow? You know what I mean?
Exactly. So,
and I think that that helped us get to where we are now. You know, you wouldn't
Absolutely, no doubt.
You probably wouldn't have had that mindset now if you didn't go through some of the things that you've been through. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I appreciate the demo. I wish I would have helped more than I did back then. You know, that's kind of one of the things I was like, you know, but it is what it is now. But like you said, man, it's kids, man, they don't understand. And like you said, thank God we have social media, bro. I tell people all the every time I do an interview or anything, I say, man, the thing that saved me for sure and saved us, man, is the social, Facebook and Instagram and all these things these kids have now, man. Like, man, bro,
it changed everything. Because find me a not even a college athlete, right? But just a guy or a girl in college. And they'd have had the same reaction, you know, man, if I was on Instagram Live or if somebody was videotaping me when I was 19 years old in the middle of, you know, with freedom on a college campus in a big city.
Right.
Find me somebody who wouldn't have wanted people to see some of that. And I'll find you somebody who's living a pretty sheltered lifestyle. You know what exactly. I mean? And probably making good decisions. No disrespect to people that may not be in those situations.
Right.
But reality is there's a lot of people, you know, coming up in our generation that wouldn't have wanted social media when they're in college sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't mean that you were out of control per se. It just means that, you know, even to this day, I mean, I think it's wild how much, you know, there's no privacy for young people and people are getting judged by what they're doing at 19 years old. Mm-hmm. And it's changed the process for young players now. Like, as a coach and as a mentor like you are, and what I've tried to do in Maine when I talk to young players through a nonprofit that I have is exactly that. Not only do you have this responsibility at the next level, whatever that is for you, but now you have this entire different aspect of visibility and exposure that can be used to your benefit in some ways. But also if you're not, you know, if you're not aware of it, it can be a negative for you. So it's challenging, man. Like these young up and coming student athletes, you know, it's there's a lot on their plate, you know, with that stuff, you know what I mean? And, you know, I think the first guy who really got aired out with that stuff was Johnny Manziel. And a lot of the stuff that Johnny Manziel was doing was what 90% of college people, you know, we don't even have to separate athletes. Like, just because you're an athlete, you're not a normal person. Right. Normal people are doing in college. You know what I mean? Like, having a good time, making mistakes, learning, you know what I mean? Figuring out things about yourself, finding out what your limits are. You don't know what your limit is until you go past it. You know what I mean? And if you go past your limit and you're a Heisman quarterback and people are videotaping you, I mean, it's not going to be a good look for a lot of people. Right. You know what I mean? And so, it's wild, man. And having a daughter and, you know, I can't imagine. I talk to my wife about this all the time, Shawnee, like, can you imagine what things are going to look like 18 years from now? My daughter's one. So 18 years ago, like, the internet was like right after the dot-com boom.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, now where things are at, imagine 18 years from now, like the different, I don't even think it's going to look the same. So
right.
It's wild.
Now you said it right, man. I tell people all the time, you know, with the think first motto and stuff like that, it's like it's a natural thing. You know, you think you should know, but a lot of people don't think about the reactions down the line. They think about just now, like whether like if I'm out having fun and I'm tipsy, I'm thinking about having fun right now. I think about everything else later instead of thinking about the magnitude of, you know, the choices I make right now, how could it affect my draft status or, you know, my business or my job. You know what I mean? We didn't think about that at the moment. We just thinking about the fun, you know, whereas now I kind of teach these kids. It sucks because they're young, have fun, but at the same time, you got to have fun, but not too much fun. I guess you have to put caps on everything because of social media. You can't go out and have fun. You can't be like everybody else. You can't experience college life because everybody's recording. Yeah. Everybody's recording. Everybody's watching you. You're on a magnifying glass. And it sucks, man. But I mean, it is what it is. It is what it is now. So it's like,
what it is, right?
You gotta adjust. So, yeah, man. I mean, like you said, man, I tell people all the time, there's no point in looking back at the past unless you grab and learn the lessons from it. You know what I mean? Because it's done with. You know, we can't go back and relive our college lives and try to do it all over again. So it is what it is on that. So now you have a great college career, man. And then now it's time for the next level. Now it's time to get ready for the draft and, you know, the NBA process. So what was that experience like for you and the process of that?
At first, it was disappointing. I mean, I expected to get drafted out of college. You know, I felt like when I looked at the pool of players and the 60 guys, I felt like I was good enough to be one of those guys. But again, one of the many, many lessons that I've learned and carried throughout my career in college is the importance of winning, you know, and that's the one thing of all the things, the off the court stuff, man, I really don't regret anything. You know what I mean? I don't regret anything. On the court, I would say the number one regret I have is I just didn't have the understanding of how important that winning element is. Of course, winning is important. Everybody wants to win, but you have so many people that convince you that your individual play is a big part of it, which it is to a certain extent.
Right.
But being concerned about that is doing yourself a disservice as a player. Making everything about winning. These guys in college, these NBA scouts, man, they know what they're doing. You know, and they know what you can do, whether you average 15 points or whether you average 9 points. You know, if you have the skill set and you go far enough and you win, you open up a lot of doors. So I feel like the fact that we didn't go to the NCAA tournament our junior and senior year, I didn't realize that it was over. That was it. There was nothing else that when it came down to me and whoever the other guy was for a couple teams that considered it, that was the red flag. Because the minute that a program like University of Maryland doesn't go to the tournament, it raises a red flag. So people are going to dig and they're going to say, why didn't that team go to the tournament? There had to have been something going on because they had these talented players. Mm-hmm. So, of course, they did their digging. And there was stuff that I had going on off the court that you know, would have been a red flag to a certain extent when I look back on it, you know, with some of the decisions and some of the things that I had happen off the court. Mm-hmm. You know, where if it's between this guy and that guy, you know, they didn't go. So I think that was part of it. And so to answer your question, I was disappointed at first that I didn't get drafted. Right. And then I went to summer league with the Pistons and I broke my foot. So I broke my foot in an area where I was out 8 months. It was an navicular joint. So it was an injury that took a really long time to heal. So I was out all the way until March 1st of the next year. So I basically missed my whole first year out of college. And that was very, very, very difficult. Not only did I have the setback of not being drafted,
right?
I had the setback of not even playing and now having to open up the doors to going overseas and then ending up in a small town of 1,000 people in Germany, which it was the first division in Germany. And so that was a good start. And we ended up going to the finals. And it was a cool experience. And then I did the summer league thing for a couple of years, trying to get back. But, you know, it, you know, when I look back at it now, I mean, what I know now from what I knew then, I understand the reason why I wasn't in the NBA. You know, with my size, with my position, there wasn't really a stretch four at that time. Am I a three? Am I a wing? And it was, you know, is he laterally quick enough to be blah, 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 blah. But really what it came down to, if I'm not shooting at a 40% clip from three, it's just not going to work out. You know, I didn't fit the mold of, you know, a guy who was going to fit on a roster spot for my size and position. So I was really beating a door that was locked shut. And then I realized that, you know, at a pretty early age, like 22, 23, and then my career started overseas. So it started with a little bit of disappointment, but I carried that chip on my shoulder, you know, for the first couple of years and worked really hard to get back from the injury I had.
Right. And like you said, man, I can only imagine, like you said, man, not getting drafted and then playing somebody thinking you're going to have the opportunity, then you break your foot. Like, I can just only imagine mentally, man, what that must have been like. And then, like you said, you had to set out pretty much your whole rookie year, you know what I mean? Then now you got to come back and kind of fight your way back and get rehab. Rehab sucks all within itself. And then try to get back and put yourself in position to get an opportunity, whether it's in the NBA or overseas, you know, because they look at all this stuff, you know. But you were still fairly young, man, so it was that helped a lot too, you know.
And not having a job. I mean, you know, like I finished college and was jobless. You know what I mean? It's not like I got out of college and it was like I was using my degree to work somewhere. I didn't have a guaranteed contract.
Right.
You know, so I'm 22 years old, jobless for a year, right. You know, and that was a reality check in terms of like, I don't have my per diem now, you know what I mean? And what are we going to do here?
Right.
You know,
right.
So it was like my Dukes and them helping me get like a little credit card and maxing as many out as I possibly could. And that also added to, like, I remember I used to videotape myself every once in a while, like to remember where my headspace was at, mm-hmm. because I had visioned that I was going to get through this. I was going to end up making money, whether it was in the NBA or, you know, overseas. And I wanted to always remember what I felt like in that time, you know, of being, having no job and, you know, cause you're still trying to carry yourself. Like I was at Maryland, I'm going to be playing pro. So amongst your peers, you're still trying to carry yourself like you're not broke. You know what I mean? So you're still trying to keep up with the Joneses and make it work. So that whole process and how I felt at that time was a huge tailwind, man, for me, not only with my basketball career, but with things off the court financially, like really, really understanding that I never wanted to feel that way again. And I never wanted to be in that situation again. And having that like reality check for that 1 year was a great lesson for me, because it definitely, as I came into making money, I appreciated it that much more.
Right.
And then, you know, over time it definitely served as a major, major motivator for me.
Right. And like you said, man, it's the learning lessons, bro. We it sucks when we go through them. It sucks, man. At the time, but yeah. Now your thought process is a lot different, and now you appreciate the money aspect. You know what it felt like, because, like you said, in college we chartered jets, escorted on the bus to the airports for dams. I mean, we didn't food. I mean, we didn't want for anything. You know what I mean? Then like you said, you can go from that to now. I don't have that. I don't have the access anymore. You know what I mean? We don't have, we don't have those people there to help us, like at Maryland, where we had people doing this, that, and the third for us, you know, helping us out.
Right.
So now you go to overseas, right? What was some of your best experiences over there in regards to what country you were in, and what were the not so great ones?
So I was fortunate after that first year in Germany to play well in summer league. And then I played well with Sacramento and went to training camp with them. Felt like I had some traction there. And again, you know, sometimes when I break this shit down, it ends up sounding like a pity party with the injury shit. Cause then I go to training camp with Sacramento and I damaged a ligament on the outside of my knee. So I was out for like 2 months. So I had to leave training camp. And then I had to go back home again. Like, again, I had a job for 2-3 months, which got me back to where I needed to be with some of the, you know, kind of debt I had for that first year out. And then I decided to go to the training camp. And then I end up having to leave due to an injury and played well and thought I had a pretty good shot of making that team and ended up back home in Maryland. I was staying in Maryland and doing my rehab there. And fortunately, I was convinced to go the D-League route, which I didn't want to do, but it was like, look, you don't really have anything great overseas right now.
Right.
And I still really wanted to be in the league because I felt like I was so close.
Yeah.
So I enter the draft for the D League. I get drafted and I go to Sioux Falls and Nate Tibbetts was the coach there. He's the head assistant for the Trailblazers now. And he was awesome. And I had some really big games like the first 2 months I was there.
Yeah.
And then I got an offer and Bartelsteen, my agent, is like, you're going to be one of the first call ups. Like, I'm getting some calls, you know, and so I felt like there was traction, but then boom, I get offered a job in the ACB for Gran Canaria, which is like on the beach.
Right.
And it was for like 20 grand a month.
Right.
And I was just like, so to me again, 20 grand a month, I'm like sold. Right. And I'm in South Dakota
right.
in like the negative 10 degrees and 2 feet of snow staying in like a efficiency with Jason Klotz, this wild ass dude from Texas.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, from Texas. And I'm like, I'm out. And I go there and I went to the ACB, which I didn't know how incredible an opportunity that was. Like a lot of guys play their whole career to get that ACB shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it due to situation and a timing thing. I got that opportunity and went there and played well and then ended up staying there in Spain for a few years. And that was the trajectory and the platform. And a lot of young guys, it's crazy how fragile that first year or two is in Europe. You don't even, it is the most make or break,
mm-hmm.
right place, right time. If you don't have the right numbers on the right team with the right minutes in the right league, you can go from here to here. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah.
People don't realize, it's like, okay, there's 1,000 different leagues.
Right.
But there's only a few where, like, you don't live in, like, a very, very difficult situation with, like, a crazy schedule, awful travel for not really that much money.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I realized it at that time. And because I think of some of the things that have happened at first, I really appreciated it. And I didn't take it for granted that some Americans do coming from big schools, like I'm so-and-so from so-and-so school. Like that shit doesn't fly in Europe.
Right.
You are just another American who they expect to be a selfish prick. Right. A lot of these guys, they like to be honest, like they have seen so many guys come over there with that attitude and that mentality. Like I'm here to get mine and get money and move on up and get out of my way. You know, and so I was able to kind of fit in and figure out my way with dealing with that stuff pretty early because I was so grateful to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So just that negative experience came to fruition for me relatively quick of just being super grateful to even have that opportunity. And I was able and I was still so motivated because I felt like at that time in my 20s that I was good enough to be in the NBA. And B, now that I'm here in Europe, I'm seeing a lot of guys that I'm better than. And in my position, I want to be one of the top players in Europe in my position. And that was my goal. And I used, obviously, the money side being as it's a business. That to me was the scoreboard from a certain extent. Like I see this guy making $1 million.
Right.
I'm getting it. There's no way I'm not. I'm going to figure out what I need to do to do it. I studied what I needed to do, where I needed to go. I was really hands-on with like what teams I went to and what my role was going to be in the minutes and what the coach's system was and all these different things. And I got a little bit of momentum and, you know, right place, right time, had a couple winning teams and then got with the right agent. And then when I was about 27, I had a really good year in Spain. And then after that, I started to make, you know, some really good money for a few years. And that started to give me some real good trajectory, for the next years after that.
Right. And like you said, man, you said something very key. And that was in the sense of that first year overseas is so critical and so important that if you pick the wrong situation, that can because how they look at it, they look at your resume and they look at, oh, well, you play here, it can affect either your money or it can affect the respect factor. Like I remember being in South Korea and I was making about 25 a month over there. And I'm like, cool. So when it was time for me to leave there, I'm telling my agent, like, yo, and I had an offer to go to Spain. I tell my agent, I'm like, oh man, I need the same amount over in Europe. And he's like, but they don't respect the Asian market like that. They don't. Not so it's like the competition is good. So it's like, but I'm young. I don't know. This is my first year over, like my first official year overseas. So I didn't understand that. You know what I mean? You don't, like you said, you're a young player, you don't know these things. You know what I mean? So it's key. I remember looking at Drew Nicholas and his acceleration in his pro career in regards to, I know his first year, what he made, and he played in France. And then from there, it was like a building factor. You know what I mean? So, but I said, when I was overseas, I didn't look at those things. If I wasn't happy, I was out. You know what I mean? But they look at that stuff too. They look at,
for sure.
So why you keep bouncing from place to place? So that affects your money. It affects what team want to pick you up, the leagues you play in. Like every place I went, people always question like, why are you here? Or right? Because I didn't understand. They look at your resume. I didn't understand those things. Like you said, what you understand now and what you learned early on in your career, which helped you get to where you're at now in your 15th season. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I think a lot of young guys definitely need to know that and hear those things. Because in the poor, especially now, man, because the money's overseas is different now with the pandemic and the way things is. It's not like how it used to be. You know what I mean? So, man, it's I don't know. It's like you said, it's a blessing, bro. To just, man, you did 15 seasons, bro. That's a long time, man. That's a long time. So you had some of your best. What was some of the moments that was like? And I think I remember one country you were in, man, and it was like, I was like, bro, where you at? And you told me, I was like, I can, and it was so cold over there. I remember you telling me that. And I think you still was making pretty good money. So you in a place where it may not be as great as the south of France or, you know, Grand Canary, but you're still making good money. So what was that like? You know, you can make good money, but it's not as great as the other countries you probably were in.
Yeah, I mean, that was, so I left, I was in Malaga in the EuroLeague, and then I went to Kazakhstan. And, you know, Kazakhstan was one of the coldest places in the world, but that was 100%, it was 100% about the money. You know, it was the biggest contract I've gotten in my career. And so that was, you know, it made everything about it that was brutal, from the long, long trips to the cold, it's the coldest capital city in the world. It made that part easy. You know what I mean? It made that part like, I can handle this, because every time that the check hit each month, I'm like, listen, you can bury me under the ground. You can put me in jail for this and I'm good. Like, right. I literally, like, for that type of money, cause I really appreciate and respect money. You know what I mean? And so, like, I don't take it for granted, you know? Mm-hmm. So I literally used to joke, like, you could put me in jail for 10 months for this amount of money. I will do 10 months in jail for this amount of money. And if you don't believe me, offer me that amount of money and I'll go to jail for sure. So, and I understand people are probably like, well, I can tell you've never been to jail. I know some of my closest friends who have unfortunately had to go that route. People that I've known since I was really young, and I could handle it for 10 months for that amount of money. I mean, it was just that point of my career was a move that was because of the money, you know? But when I was in Germany, when I first got over there, and it was 2,000 people, you know, in that town, and I just missed my whole first year out, there was a lot of times where I questioned if I want to do this. A lot of conversations with my dad, where I'm like, I'm done. I'm coming home. I can't do this. Like, there's no way I can. And, you know, thank God that I had his guidance to talk me and walk me through it. You know, it's really important to have somebody in your life who can talk you off the ledge. You know what I mean? Because of everybody I know who's gone to Europe, I don't know one guy who hasn't wanted to leave at some point. Like, I can't do this. You know what I mean? You're by yourself. You know, it doesn't matter, even if you're in Madrid, Spain, places that sound awesome to people. Right. Like, okay, it's nice if you're on a vacation for a week, but if you're by yourself and you're doing two-a-days and you're traveling, it's hard work. You know what right. I mean? Like, I don't want to sound like, you know, it's not the best job in the world, because it is, but right. make no mistake about it, it's work. You know what I mean? And so, and you're away from your family, and you know, so it's one of these things where, there was a lot of times that I remember over the last 15 years where, I mean, I don't know of a year that I've had overseas where there hasn't been one point, even from being 37, 36, 35, 34, all the way down to 22, where I haven't been like, I don't think this is going to work out. You know what I mean? Like, there's never a perfect year. You right. know what I mean? There's always adversity, and there's always times where you're just like, oh man, you know, even when you're on the French Riviera, like that's the way it is. Like, the grass is always greener. I, you know, when I talk to young kids, at least about my experience, you know, money doesn't solve everything. You know right. what I mean? And mental health and being happy, that to me is the success that I'm chasing, you know, right. and to me, money is a vehicle that I've worked for to try to take a path of less resistance, obviously, right. with certain things I don't have to deal with, hopefully. Right. But there's always going to be adversity and shit where, you know, it's rough, it's tough. Like, you have a bad day, you're stressed out, you're depressed about X, Y, and Z.
Right.
And that solidarity of being overseas, you know, that's the best part of, I've been with my wife now for 5 years, been married for a couple of years. And you know, that to me obviously changed everything, because having her with me has made the process, it's a lot better than, you know, because being by yourself can wear on you, and a lot of guys can't handle that.
Now, you're absolutely right, man. And you said a lot of key points, in the sense of, you know, people that mental health when you're over there, man. If you don't have your family with you, you're going through certain things. We was over in Lithuania together. And I remember we were talking in your room, bro. And you was talking about this is gonna be probably my last year right here. I said, oh, man. He's like, yeah, man. You was icing your knees. He's like, yeah, man, my knees, man. I can't, you know, can't do it, man. Like, man, I'm shutting it down after this year. And you sound like a 2 year deal or something, or like another 1 year. Look at this dude, man. He told me he's retiring, and then that was
5 years ago.
Exactly, my friend. I was like, yo,
I've said that every year for the last 5 years.
I was saying, man, you say shut down. Next, you know, I think I was talking to somebody. I said, man, he just signed over. He signed over in, I think after you left Kazakhstan, you signed back over in, where did you go? France?
After Kazakhstan, I went to Monaco.
I said, this dude right here told me he's retiring. Yeah.
But here's the thing, bro. But no, because to your point, I've said that every year for the past five, but it was a psychological mind game I would play with myself.
Okay.
Because it would take pressure off me. Like, I put so much pressure on myself throughout my career. Like, in looking back at it, like, every game to me was life or death.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I put so much pressure. I didn't really enjoy the games because I had so much anxiety that I had to have a great game. We had to win. Or when you have a week in between, that week would be just devastating. If you lose in a bad game, that long week of practice, it was the worst. And I would fear that week of sitting on a loss. So I would just put so much pressure on myself, and it helped me be successful for sure. But in Europe, you're not on these, you mentioned a 2 year deal. That was like a 10 year deal in the NBA. Like, it's 1 year, 1 year. You have no room for error. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when you're at the highest level, I wanted to stay at that level. You know what right. I mean? I didn't want to take a step back. So, you know, I would then get to the point where it's like, you know what, this is my last year, because I, you know, there's other things in life I can do. You know, I started doing things off the court with investing and with some business development stuff when I was 27. So about 10 years ago now. So So at that point, I had 5 years of traction with that stuff.
Right.
And so that made me see what life would look like off the court, and I knew I was going to be good.
Right.
So I was going to be able to leave the game and be able to provide for my family.
Right.
So it was like I took it. I did, basically, long story short, I told myself that, and I put that energy out there just to take some damn pressure off myself. Like, you know what I mean? It's okay if this is the last year, you know what I mean? Right. To prepare myself for that. And now 5 years later, I'm telling you the same thing. Is this going to be my last year? This is it, bro.
Hey, I feel your net now. Real quick before I let you go. Tell me about, cause I know you're doing some stuff up in Maine, man. I know you said the nonprofit, and I know you're doing something. Tell me what you're doing business wise off the court, man. Tell us.
Yeah. I mentioned when I was 27, I wanted to be really proactive when I started to make money. That was something I was committed to pretty early. And so I was really, really pro, cause you know, being overseas, you have a lot of free time.
Right.
I'm not a video game guy. It got to the point where I wasn't going out because I learned to diet and the process stuff. So I was really taking care of my body. So I had all this free time. So I started to really study. I started with real estate with just some small, mixed unit type stuff, mixed use, commercial, residential. And I just took step by step for a couple years of investing in some stuff in Maine. And then I started to do the renovation work. I built a team of guys through meeting a couple carpenters and then some subcontractors. And then, so I partnered with a carpenter, and we started a small real estate development company that I was really active for about 5 years with that. And through that process, I developed a space, which is popular now. It's a shared, like a co-working space. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of a social engagement / co-working. So there's event space, private offices. And I started that business myself and then brought in a team of management. And I just found a passion for that because a lot of the same principles with sports, with the team and bringing the right personalities together and putting that time and passion I was using on the court,
right,
it gave me that off the court. So I was just studying business leaders, different models. And there's so much online that you can access now. Mm-hmm. That I just dove into it. And so I started a business called Cloudport in Portland, Maine. And that was now about it'll be 5 years this year. And then I started with investing. I've invested in a couple different industries in Maine. And one that I'm really excited about is the marijuana industry, which is a booming industry in the United States and throughout the world. But Maine's been ahead of that for a while because Maine's been medicinally legal for a while and recreationally legal for a while. So I partnered with somebody 4 years ago in that industry, and that's gone well. And continue to do some investing in the markets, like really not anything crazy, like long-term stuff. And that's it. So I've just been really active off the court with entrepreneurial stuff and finding different things I'm passionate about. And, so now it's like, I love to play basketball,
right,
and I'm going to play as long as I can, but I know what things are going to look like when I'm done for sure. Like I'm going to transition out into what I already have in motion and continuing to build relationships and trying to find things that I love doing. And one of them, which is like part of what we've talked about this whole conversation, is helping young players with the process we just talked about from when you leave college and how do you manage your trajectory as a player in Europe, especially an American, and how things have changed. And being here for 15 years, I understand that I have a resume and an experience and skill set where I understand some of the things you need to do for that trajectory. So that's something that I've already started to do, helping guys and connecting them with the right representation for that path. And so that's something I'm going to keep doing too.
Okay, man. Yeah, man. That's awesome, man. I keep up with everything you're doing, man, with playing
overseas. Likewise, man.
And business-wise, man. So I'm definitely super proud of you, bro. And everything that you're doing, everything that you got going on. I appreciate your brotherhood, man. All the fun times we had back in College Park, but we also still stay close. You know, all of us, me, you, John, all of us, honestly. And man, everything that you're doing, man, with the family, you know, the wifed up now, man, got the little one, man. That's a blessing, man.
Likewise, so man. I mean, we can inspire each other from afar, man. And I don't mean to cut you off, but just before we head out, man, I wanted to tell you how much I appreciate and respect you as a father and the stuff you've done. I mean, an author, you know, the books that you published in the Think First, what you're bringing to young players. We needed it. Players need it. People need it. And, you know, it inspires me to see the stuff you've been doing, man. And I look forward to us being able to connect off the court. That's been one of the biggest things. Being in Europe for 15 years, one of the biggest things that I have to sacrifice is the relationships face to face. I mean, like, people were freaking out about doing Zoom calls. I'm like, I've been doing video calls for 10 years. Like, it's going to be all right, people. We're going to, we'll be fine. I mean, it's not ideal, but this is, you know, this is what I've had to do for, you know, a long time, and not being able to have those relationships. And so I can't wait to get back and link and, you know, it's been great. I appreciate you having me on, man. I was excited about it, and, you know, look forward to connecting soon, bro.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Anything you need from me, bro, and everything that you're doing, man, I'm all for it. You know, and I'm definitely going to reach out to you to help me doing what I'm doing, man. I'm still building up on things, man, and trying to spread the word and the message, man. And you definitely have that experience. Please do. Been there, done that, man. So I'm definitely going to be reaching out to you, man, for sure. But nah, definitely good luck to the rest of your season, bro. You might end up pulling the 20, knowing you. Get a LeBron James thing up in you.
Oh, this is it, man. This is the last year, bro. This is it.
Yeah, all right. But nah, man, nah, seriously, bro. I appreciate you taking time out your schedule, man, your day, man. Tell the family I said hello. Thanks for joining Go Terps with Travis Garrison.
Go Terps, man.
Absolutely, bro.
Absolutely, bro. I'll talk to you later.
I appreciate you, bro.